guys, welcome back to the JLR Equestrian Podcast with your host Jordan, and I have a super exciting guest with me today. His name is Michael Wilhelm, and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, of course. So Michael is also an eventer, and he is based kind of close to me in Michigan. So where exactly are you based right now?
I am just about half an hour south of Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay. Cool. So do you have your own farm then, right, I believe?
Yes. Yeah. So my family is not my personal farm, but yes, my parents have a farm. It's a nice little private farm that we moved to a few years ago.
Awesome. That's super cool. So you event right now. You've evented up to the advanced level. And can you kind of take us back and how you got into riding originally and how you got to be where you are today?
Sure. So technically, not a full advanced. I have done all three phases of one, but I have not strung them all together in one competition. But so yeah, I started when I was 11, and I'm 28 now. I always have to do the math on that one. After 21, everything's a blur.
Yeah. But,
so I started when I was 11. My mom actually rode before I was born and then got out of it for a while. And then she started back when I was 10, and I was always out there with her. And,
okay.
So I started when I was 11, did some hunter jumper stuff for quite a few years, and then started eventing when I was, I think, around 15, 16.
Okay. So did you decide to make the switch, or did someone like tell you how to get into eventing exactly? Because, you know, sometimes hunter jumpers are like, no, I don't ever want to go out into a field. How did that happen?
So I actually made the switch to dressage for a winter.
Okay.
And then I missed the jumping, and I didn't do like any of the A-rated hunters or anything.
Okay.
It was just IEA, which is like interscholastic for like middle school, high school.
Which is great.
So did that and just wasn't crazy about it, and made the switch to dressage for a winter, and then I missed the jumping, and my trainer happened to be an eventer, so
just
combined them all.
There you go. It just kind of worked out. Well, that's awesome. So then you started eventing, and that was in high school then. So then how did you decide of if you wanted to go to college or not and continue riding through college? Like, how did that kind of work out for you?
So I would say it was never really a consideration to not go to college.
Okay.
I didn't really view, actually all through high school I was going to go for pre-vet. And that's how I picked out my colleges, and so up until registration, you know what, I don't want to be a vet. That's a hard life.
Yeah.
I was doing it for the love of horses, but I thought, you know, it's going to potentially take away a lot of the riding.
Yeah.
And there are vets that do still ride and do still compete, but it's a lot harder. It's a lot more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, equine vets, they also don't make a great living. And so it's, you know, a financial aspect too. I went to college. I majored in business management.
Okay.
My family has a commercial roofing company.
Yep.
So that was kind of the next plan. Was, you know, it paid for the horse habit growing up.
Yeah,
so
there you go.
I figured it was a good stable.
Yeah, that's cool.
Career to get into.
Yeah.
To pay for the horse habit when
yeah.
I had to pay for start paying for it myself.
Cool.
So,
yeah. So we'll ask you a fun little question. So you have the roofing company. Do you ever help actually do the roofs, or do you kind of contract everything for it?
So I'm basically a project management and estimator. So we look at blueprints, we look at existing buildings, put together quotes for the roofs, and then, you know, the ones that I get, I manage them, I order materials, schedule all that stuff. So no, I'm not actually up on the roof, but I mean, I am up on the roof, but I'm not installing the roof. I go up there and check it out and all of that, but
yeah, well, that's cool. That works. Yeah. That's super cool. So my podcast is really geared towards the young riders and everything and giving them advice for looking ahead in their life. So what you went to college and you kind of said it was never kind of really an option or like a choice that you weren't going to go to college. So those young riders that are kind of out there in that ending years of high school, thinking about college, thinking about going to be like a working student before they go to college or just not going to college at all, what is kind of your advice for them? when they're kind of like wondering what should I do next, like, because really you could go down any path that you want, you can make it your own, but what kind of advice would you have for the young riders looking ahead?
So quite a few different, and I'm not known for being short-winded, but a lot of it depends what your goals are. So if you want to be a professional and you are dead set on that, is college a good backup plan? Yes. Is it maybe, you know, that might be the route that would be the most or the least likely to go to college? You know, if you're really absolutely certain that you want to be a professional rider or whatever, you know, you might be better off spending that time and money you know, going to be a working student for someone. If you're not sure, I would say college is always a good you know, thing to start figuring it out, and at least you have something to go off of. And you know, for me, for my situation, it wasn't that it wasn't a choice, it was just like that was always the goal to go to college.
That's kind of what you had in mind.
So it wasn't like I never considered not going. But so when I went, you know, like I said, it was getting into the roofing company with that in mind. You know, go and learn maybe some different things, because my stepdad, he went to college for like half a, or one semester or something, but so everything he, you know, runs the, the roofing company, it's all, you know, what he's learned just running it. So it wasn't a bad idea for me to go and like maybe get exposed to different things. So in my opinion, you know, if you're dead set on being professional, maybe you can skip college. Maybe you end up going back to college later. If you end up not wanting to do that for a career, but, you know, otherwise it's a good, I mean, there are, and there are a lot of careers out there technical wise that you can get into that you don't need college for. So I would, you know, look into that too, see what your passion is. You know, you, you don't want to get into a career that you hate going to a job every day,
because that,
you know, that's a third of your life, you know, 8 hours every day. So find something that, you know, you're at least interested in. You know, I can't say roofing's a passion, but you know, like I said, it's a very good, stable career, and it's, you know, it paid for the horse habit, and so that was kind of my big reasoning, was that, you know, I don't want to, I didn't want to go down the professional route, because I found out with a horse I owned and with horses I rode in college that there were some that I just didn't enjoy riding. And I'm like, I'm gonna have to ride them if I'm a professional, and you know, need every dollar I can make. So, you know, getting into that career gave me the opportunity to stay in horses, because it was a, you know, it's a stable, decent paying career. So if that's, you know, that's your consideration, if you want to stay in horses and you're like, I'd like to have maybe one or two, you know, you don't have to go the professional route. There's lots of people that do it as adult amateurs that have one or two horses,
And they enjoy it. Awesome. Well, that's really great advice. I really appreciate that. So you have your farm at home in Ohio. I'm in Michigan. So are you technically considered a professional or an amateur? And what kind of does your business at home look like?
So technically I'm a professional. Because I do teach some lessons on the side. I do have a couple sponsors. So per the USEF definition, I am a professional because I am getting compensation. Do I consider myself a professional? Not really, because, you know, I'm not doing it full time. I'm not riding 8 horses a day. I'm not, you know, teaching 20, 40 lessons a week. So I'm kind of on that weird line, like definition I am, but not in the actual practicality.
Okay, sounds good. So for my people who are listening to the podcast that have never heard of Michael, Michael also has a super cool new online horse learning academy that is really cool, and he's going to tell us all about it. So just give us like the rundown of what it is.
So where to start? So I guess it actually branches off well from what I was just talking about, was that, you know, I feel like I'm kind of straddling this line between, you know, I've gone up the levels quite a bit. I've been at intermediate for, I think, 7 seasons now, or at least part of. Wait for the really loud truck to go by. So I've been at intermediate for, you know, at least parts of 7 seasons now, on one horse the entire time, and then there's another horse that has been a couple seasons. So I feel like I'm at this point where I have done a lot more than maybe the typical amateur rider.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, I signed up for a couple master classes last year from other people that were interesting, and I wasn't, you know, even thinking about starting my own. But I was watching them, and I was like, you know, the people that I teach at home, you know, the novice riders, beginner novice riders, or even, you know, there's some non-eventers, you know, they're starting a horse off the track, and, you know, it's 3 or 4 years old, and they're just learning to, you know, get it on the flat and maybe start jumping. I'm like, these people need something a little bit more what they need. You know, master classes with Boyd Martin are great if you can actually use that knowledge. But you know, and it was interesting for me for the master classes, but I was like, the people that I teach, it's gonna be over their heads, and it's not anything
against
them,
understand,
but you know, I wouldn't have understood it 10 years ago, or I wouldn't have been able to put it into practice. So after, you know, going through that, I was like, I was looking around, I'm like, there's not really anyone doing this, and I'm like, I'm kind of, you know, that nice little middle ground that, you know, I have a full-time job, I only have 2 horses, and, you know, I can relate to the people, you know, there's a lot of things that, you know, the professionals that ride 8 horses, 10 horses a day, you know, it comes so naturally to them as breathing, they don't have to think about it, and for us people who have 1 or 2, you know, it's a daily struggle, and there's lots of things that we don't know that, you know, the professionals take for granted. And so, you know, competing at intermediate, especially going out east, because that's pretty much where all of the intermediates are, getting a lot of lessons from everyone out there. That was kind of the big thing, was I was like, you know, I have all of this knowledge, but I can still relate. And, you know, I've been exposed to so much that I can pick and choose what would actually be helpful to someone at the lower levels. Maybe they want to go training. Maybe they want to go prelim. Maybe they want to go be a novice. You know, there's things that they can learn and know that can help them, that, you know, it doesn't need to be, you know, Olympic dressage champion teaching them how to do the perfect tempi changes. Like, that's not what everyone needs. The majority of riders need someone to walk them through, you know, how to stud your horse, what considerations go into studding, what considerations go into, you know, maybe hauling a trailer, or you know, plenty of stuff like that. You know, how to walk a cross-country course, how to walk a show jumping course, how to memorize your dressage test. So just kind of getting my thoughts and ideas out there, because like I said, I, you know, I teach a handful of lessons on the weekends, but, you know, I teach an hour and then that's it, it's done. Versus doing the masterclass videos, I can teach an hour and then it can go to countless people.
And
I can help
more.
A lot of people with the same amount of time. So that was kind of the big impetus behind it.
Well, that's really cool, and I'm really happy that someone finally has done this for those people that are kind of in the middle, where you're at the lower levels, where, like, you'd love to go ride with Boyd in all the upper levels, but, like, you're not going to be able to learn as much as you probably could if you're riding at that upper level. So how can people, like, join this academy or learn more about it? Where is it located? Do you have a website? Is it on Facebook?
So I'll wait for the horse to finish screaming. So I'm pretty much on everything. I'm trying to get into the marketing aspect of all of it, so I'm on TikTok officially now, which I resisted, at least personally, for years and years. So I'm on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, but yes, the website is www.equineacademy.com. And so there's I post blogs all the time on certain subjects. Those are always free for access. On the Facebook page, I post a lot of other kind of informational content, and then there is kind of a separate and on the Facebook page I do have some, like, video snippets and stuff too, but as far as full access, it is a membership program. So it's $19.99 a month for the silver membership. There's a gold membership, which is you also get a video lesson basically each month. It's not live, because I didn't know if I could really swing that with my schedule and time, but basically it's, you know, record yourself, send it in, and I'll look at it and critique it and say, you know, here, try this, do this.
That's awesome.
But the silver membership is just, you know, that gives you all full access to everything. And it's just, it's a constant creation. You know, I'm always adding to it. I have, I think, about 14 hours of videos right now. And I'm sure hitting the off season now, hopefully I'll be, in a couple weeks, I'll be making a lot more.
That's really cool.
So yeah, that's,
Awesome. So your goals are obviously to help those riders and helping them learn like other things other than the riding, which is awesome. And so what are your hopes for the people that are wanting to join the academy? What goals do you hope that they're able to achieve or different dreams they may have with joining your academy?
So, I mean, it's going to be whatever each individual person's, wait for the horse to stop screaming, each individual person's goals are.
Yeah.
Everyone's at a different spot in their riding career. And, you know, that's another reason I wanted to start it was, you know, there's so many things that I've been exposed to mm-hmm. that can help different people at different points. And, you know, not every video might mean something to you, or you might watch it and go, oh, I already knew all of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some videos might be more for beginners and some might be a little bit more advanced. And, you know, I have helmet cam analysis videos on how I, you know, how the course actually rode. And then
that's
I also
cool.
had like the course walk videos that I actually walked the course and explained how I was approaching things on the course walk. I mean, it's, like I said, I made it to help people. That's mm-hmm. always kind of been in my nature.
Yeah.
And so, especially right now, with it just starting out, it's a lot more personalized too.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of personally reaching out to each member. Reaching out to each member and saying, you know, give me feedback, give me critique. Like, I don't know what resonates with you, what doesn't, you know, what makes sense, what doesn't.
Yeah.
You know, I want constructive feedback. You don't have to be mean about it. I've never been one who needs an instructor to yell at me. I don't need that. But you know, if there is something that, hey, you know, maybe this would be helpful, or maybe there's a certain subject that,
mm-hmm.
you know, because like I said, I started in January and spent 3 or 4 months creating the platform and the website, and then another 3 or 4 months creating content before I even officially launched.
Yeah.
And like I said, I'm just kind of continually mm-hmm. adding to it. So if there is certain subjects that someone wants, I have no problem. I have a whole huge list in my phone of different stuff I want to get to. And
That's awesome.
So if there's something that I can prioritize for people that might be interesting, I have no problem doing that.
So when you have the website, do you kind of get your own login on the website to be able, since you have a membership then, to get access to all the videos?
Yes. Yeah. So there is a membership and you make your own login. And it's, like I said, it's $19.99 a month. It's a 10-day trial.
Okay.
So if you log in and you look around and you don't like it, you know, you can cancel without paying anything. Hopefully you stick around, and if you like my teaching style and maybe there's just only a handful of videos that
mm-hmm.
you might want, like I said, I'm open.
Yeah.
It's very, especially right now with it being a little bit smaller, I'm very, you know, able to kind of cater to each individual person and, you know, what, like you said, you know, what goals they might have, what might be helpful for them. You know, I did a video on hands and turning aids.
There you go.
Because, you know, I think that's kind of one of the big stepping stones and light bulb moments for people is that, you know, when we start riding, you know, we're taught to kick to go and to pull to stop and then pull one rein to turn. But then once you become better and a little bit more balanced and a little bit stronger on the horse, then you can start, you know, using your hands a little bit less, using your seat more, turning off the outside shoulder instead of just yanking their head to the inside.
Yep.
So it's all sorts of stuff like that on, you know, various stages of, of, you know, things that people can do as they get a little bit more advanced in their riding.
Yeah, awesome. Well, that sounds super cool, and I really hope that some of my listeners go and check that out. That's super awesome. So before you leave us today, do you want to tell us about the horses that you currently have and what you've been up to with them?
Sure. So I have Kai. I've had him for 9 years, Cayenne. Actually, it'd be 9 in December. So he's been my good boy.
There you go.
He's taken me from novice to intermediate. That was in the first 3 years somehow. I don't know how. But, he was 6 when I got him. He did a couple prelims that 6-year-old year. So he had a little bit of knowledge, mm-hmm. but not a whole lot of miles.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of what we were looking for.
Yeah.
Something that could safely teach me how to go training.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't push button by any means.
Yeah.
And that's why I love him. Like, if I make a mistake, I pay for it,
yeah,
but I learn from it.
Exactly.
And, you know, he's always kept me safe. He's not a horse that ever half jumps anything. Mm-hmm. So if he questions something or if I don't ride something well, he just stops.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a rotational, you know, yeah. He doesn't land on fences.
Yeah.
So he's been the perfect horse.
Yeah, that's good.
So then I have Jack. I think he's about stepping down now.
Okay.
He had an injury a few years ago. Back from the break. he had an injury actually right after COVID shutdowns went away. Like right when competitions restarted.
Right when everything was coming.
Like 2 weeks out from the first competition, he went lame. And it was a decent like bone bruise on his fetlock. So we spent a year and a half. I said, mm-hmm. I'm not going to push him to compete.
Yeah.
So spent the year and a half rehabbing. He came out last year great. Ran around my first full advanced cross country on him.
Awesome.
But yeah, I think it's starting to bother him a little bit more. So I've been doing just dressage this year with him. And did fourth level this summer.
That's awesome.
I was planning a move up to pre-St. George. Just starting to bother him again, and we're taking care of it. So I don't know what's in his future now. But I've had him. It'll be coming up 5 years now.
That's cool. That's
on
awesome.
Black Friday.
Oh, it's coming
Black
up.
Friday.
Did you get a Black Friday deal?
I think so. And when Philip first, because Philip, I've worked with Philip Dutton in the past, and he knew I was looking for a horse, mm-hmm. and basically I was looking for something like, I love Kai and I've still been running him.
Yeah.
But he's not a fast horse.
Yeah.
So I wanted something like the next step. I'd been going intermediate for a few years when mm-hmm. I started looking. And to me, the next step, I had been fairly successful. I mean, I still had some issues, but, I was going around decently well for a few years, and the next step in my education was learning to make time on intermediate, and that just wasn't going to be a thing with Kai.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually wasn't even looking for something that experienced. I wanted something maybe prelim, but just had that potential for more. And Philip called me up one night, and I was picking poop in the arena, and my phone rang, and I looked at it, and it said Philip Dutton. I'm like, why is Philip calling me? What did I do? And he said he got Jack back, because Philip's the one who ran him around 5-star. He did, I think, Rolex 3 times and Burley once.
That's awesome.
And I said, oh, Philip, like, that's out of my, I can't afford a 5-star horse. That's not what I was looking for. And he went, no. You know, he went to a young rider for a year after Philip stopped riding him. And the young rider just, I think she didn't have time.
Yeah.
And so they sent him back to Philip. And so Philip said, you know, they just want a good home for him. I know you're looking.
Oh, yeah.
And he told me the price. And I was like, that's
a little
potential
more, yeah.
I'm like, I can't pass up the opportunity. I need to at least go sit on him. And so the rest is history at this point.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that's Jack. He is the most opinionated horse I've ever met, by far. Like, mares get a bad rap, but I haven't met a more marish horse than Jack, and he's a gelding, obviously. So it's been he's made a big difference in my riding.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of, I tried to ride my junior and senior years in college. I rode pretty much every school horse mm-hmm. at Otterbein, and just to get the feel for different horses, jumping different horses. But Jack has taught me a lot. He's like I said, he's very opinionated, and you have to walk a very fine line between, telling him that this is what we need to do, but also backing off if he starts, if he says no.
Yeah.
there's a little bit of walking on eggshells a little bit there with him. that's what our fourth level debut kind of was too. We did all the, we were schooling pre-St. George at home, and he was great. He warmed up at the competition great, and fourth level is when the tempi changes start. So we have 3 changes on the full diagonal. Did him great in the warm-up. He was doing every third. He did the fourth stride or third stride tempi changes at home. At fourth level, at least the test I did, it wasn't even like, one was quarter line, center line, quarter line. The other was every fourth stride.
Okay.
So it was, maybe every fifth stride for that center mm-hmm. line, quarter line one. Went in the ring, did the first one great, literally stopped the second time I asked. And I swear, he's like, kid, I'm 18. I galloped around 5-star level. Like, I know what I'm doing, and, I've been competing, almost my entire life, and we don't do more than one chain in the dressage ring. And I swear that's what was going through his head, because, and he did that in the second test too. Like, I schooled him. He had a little bit of a break in between the tests, took him back to the warm-up. I'm like, okay, I'm going to make sure those changes are there. Went in, did the warm-up great, went into the ring, same thing. And same thing with the pirouette. There was a quarter pirouette, and did the same thing. So that was, technically, we still got scores to go towards our silver medal. I wasn't very happy with him, because those were like the two actual challenges of fourth level. But so yeah, he's been difficult, but I've learned a lot. There's some things that I transfer over to Kai, and it's made me a better rider on Kai. And there's some things that wouldn't work on Kai that I don't do. So it's just,
You
know, lots of learning and different experience, and just kind of broadening everything and getting more tools in your tool belt.
Yeah. So do you have any young horses coming up, or anything that you're, are you looking for a new horse, since they might be coming to their end there in the career of eventing, or what are your plans ahead?
So it's funny you ask that, because literally I have no clue at this exact moment. Like I said, Jack, he was doing great all summer. I've been lightly jumping him, and I'm like, because he lives to jump. And so I'm like, okay, if I stop competing you, and if I can just lightly jump you home, like every other week, and I do like 12 jumps, let's see if you stay sound with that. And I think at this point, there's just, it's arthritis from the injury. So I don't know, because I was, that was the plan, and that plan apparently is not working. So he, I don't know. Literally, my vet was there yesterday. And did the first IRAP injection on him.
Okay.
So I don't know if he's going to be a dressage horse now or not jump, or what the future is. But so I wasn't planning, because I, aside from that joint, I have not had to touch a single other joint on that horse
the
entire 5 years I've had him. I mean, part of it, I make sure I manage him well with like Attaquan and Legend. But part of it is just genetics and you know, all of that. And so I was like, okay, he healed from his injury. He ran around great last year. And, you know, he's going to be freaking galloping around but he's going to be galloping around, like, 3-star for, like, 5 more years. Like, he's freaking sound, and I haven't had a touch a single joint. So this kind of put a wrinkle in that. And so I'm, you know, starting to keep my eye open. And, I was hoping to get, you know, another 3 to 5 years out of both of them, and before they needed to step down. And so I have some money saved up, not as much as I was planning on needing to have to save up, but I'm starting to keep my eye open. And like, I feel like at this point, you know, I got Kai, like I said, he had done about a year of prelim, and what used to be 1-star is now 2-star. So at this point in my riding, I feel like I'm comfortable enough to maybe get a 4-year-old that's, you know, maybe towards the end of their novice career and about to go to training, or maybe, you know, a 5-year-old that's just moved up to training somewhere around there, you know, another step down. I don't really have any desire to like break a horse. You know, teaching it how to trot and teaching it how to canter, like, that's, to me, that doesn't seem enjoyable. I'd rather take that refinement of, you know, they know how to walk, trot, canter, they know how to jump at least, you know, 3 foot. And so now I can refine it and teach them, you know, how to move better, how to use their body better in dressage, how to jump cleaner, how to turn better, you know, for the demands of the levels, slicing things and, you know, angles and skinnies and, you know, taking all of that refinement and adding it on. Because that was actually a funny thing when I got Kai, you know, rode him for months and figuring him out, and I got to the point where I asked him for a half pass, and that was apparently the end of his training, because he did not have any idea what I was asking for. So it was fun. Like, I got to teach him half pass. I was the one who moved him up to intermediate and 3-star, and so like that was brand new for both of us. And so it's kind of been fun to like teach him that along the way. And we're starting on some tempi changes. Funny story with him, he actually, apparently, I found out a few weeks ago when I started thinking about doing some tempis with him, he doesn't actually know the flying change aids. I took him third level years ago to get my bronze medal with the USDF. He's done half a dozen advanced tests for like AI, AI divisions. I think he just knows when I'm changing direction, and he's like, I'm gonna change now. So he did the, does the first one great. Second one, he's like, I don't know what you're asking. So that's been a little bit of a learning process. Yeah. I just started, you know, laying out ground poles and doing my changes in between sets of ground poles so that he associates the ground pole, going in between the ground poles with doing changes, and it keeps them straighter too. And so it's fun. I like, you know, being able to teach that refinement. Yeah. I posted a video years and years ago at this point. I jumped him over like those 4 foot tall traffic cones, and I had a line of them like 2 or 3 strides apart, and there's three of them. And I'm like, okay, well, I think we got skinnies down. I can't get any skinnier than this unless I like put a toothpick out or something. So that was really fun to do that. But yeah, so I mean, like I said, that's kind of been the basis of you know, making the Equine Academy. Was, you know, I'm not an expert by any means, but I have enough exposure and knowledge, especially being just around you know, all those 4-star, 5-star riders out on the East Coast. You know, I can help so many lower mid-level people that don't need, like I said, that super advanced stuff, but need, you know, a common, plain, here's how, you know, here's things you should be working on to get around novice, or to get around training, or maybe prelim.
For sure.
You know, they don't need an Olympian to teach them how to go novice. And so, and they can't, you know, there's so many Olympians out there, they don't have that much time in the day.
No.
So that was kind of the big factor in going into creating that. And so I'm really excited that it's launched, and hopefully, like I said, I'll keep adding to it, and hopefully people enjoy it, and we go from there.
Awesome. Yeah, I grew up riding horses with my mom. My mom would bring them up the levels to like the prelim, and then she didn't want to go any farther. So then she kind of handed them to me. And I was younger, so it was like good because they could kind of show me the ropes. And then after we ran a few prelims, the one we moved up to the intermediate. So I got to do her first intermediate, and it was my first intermediate. So that was cool. But I think it's a give and take. Like, you want to be able to have that horse that can kind of show you the ropes, but then you also want to be able to experience other things on your own as well. Like,
absolutely.
I think that's something that some people don't always understand, but it's a good thing to kind of keep in mind, because if you're going to buy the horse that's done everything, and then you're just going to keep, like, I think you should be able to try new things with your horse and not just keep everything be the same.
Yeah, and that's something big you know, I talk to people about, is that I understand there's a huge financial aspect to the sport. It is not cheap at all. So, you know, I understand the limitations. If at any point it is possible for you to get a more experienced horse, you know, whether it's fine if it's on the downside of its career, you know, there's horses high in a couple of years when he's going to be needing to step down, like maybe he'll go and teach someone how to go around training or something. You know, you don't need to buy the 3-year-old off the track, or, you know, the 6-year-old, because, you know, I have some people that say, oh, well, you know, it's an investment and I want to get a return on the investment. You can't. Your return on your investment is your education and your safety. And so, like I said, at all possible, try to get a horse that will keep you safe and will help teach you safely. I just, it bothers me that I see so many people put in bad situations by, you know, bad, and I don't want to say bad horses, but just horses that are too green, and, you know, they're not capable enough riders to really make a difference. You know, it's a green horse that needs a trainer.
It's a green horse, green rider.
Right. And, you know, you can just, it's, and then I've seen so many people, you know, drop out of the sport or get so defeated because things just go wrong. And and so, you know, one of the things I tell people, okay, if you're looking for a horse, great. You know, if your budget is, say, 10 grand, that's not going to get you a whole lot, especially today. So, you know, if you can, I know you want to get a horse right now. When you make that decision, you're like, I want it. But I always tell people, wait 6 months, wait maybe a year, just keep taking lessons, and write that board check, write that vet check, write the farrier check, write, you know, supplements, whatever, and put it in a bank account. And, you know, after the 6 months, after a year, you're going to have 15, 20 grand. And you're going to be able to, you know, 25, and you're going to be able to get a decent horse. It's not going to be you know, it doesn't need to be the fanciest thing in the world. It just needs to know its job, know how to get it, at least in terms of jumping, know how to get its feet out of the way, know how to keep you safe. So that's something I try to instill in people. It's hard because everyone wants a horse, and some people view it like, oh, I want to grow with it. And it just, there are situations where it works out, but there's a lot that it doesn't. And so, you know, that's how I came up. Like I said, my first horse didn't know a whole lot, but she was extremely quiet and kind, and went up to novice with her. And then, like I said, there was another horse in between that was a little bit of a whack job that moved on from. And he was one of the big reasons I was like, I do not want to be a professional. I don't want to have to ride a horse like that. But he had gone training, so, and he was about to move up to prelim, so he had some experience. But so Kai was the perfect horse. And like I said, it's just he was able to keep me safe and you know, teach me in a way. Like, he wasn't a schoolmaster teaching me, but he allowed me to learn, essentially. He allowed me to make the mistakes, pay for them with 20s on the record, pay for them with some falls. But, you know, he kept me safe, and he never, you know, held a grudge. He didn't, like, you know, oh, I had to stop at the water, and he won't go into water ever again. Like, no, he just didn't read it well, or I didn't present him well to it. And so I always, like I said, I always try to push people, like, just at least a handful of years, get a more experienced horse. Get yourself experienced before you try to start something younger. And like I said, you know, the next horse I'm looking for, it's going to be something, you know, at least solid novice. Could I do something a little bit younger? But I still don't think I go all the way down, and that's me going, you know, after going around intermediate for seven seasons it's or whatever hard. It's been.
Well, that's really great advice, and thank you so much for sharing that. So you talked a little bit earlier that you had some sponsors. So can you share with us who that is and who else you might thank that is kind of behind you, the team behind you making it all happen?
Sure. So I'd be remiss to not start out with my parents, because obviously they've been a massive part of my riding career, and there's no way I'd be able to do any of this without them. Have my big boy job now, and I'm pretty much paying for almost everything. Like there I said, we have our family barn, so I work instead of paying board, so that still helps. But so aside from that, yes, I do have, what am I up to? I think I'm at 4 right now. Magic A Keep. I've been with them for a few years now. And I use their boots, and that's the big thing. I made one mistake years and years ago in college of accepting a sponsor with someone I hadn't used already. It was a boot brand, and that was a bad mistake. And so, you know, every other sponsor I've ever had, it's always been someone that I've used their product for years, I love it, and then I approach them and say, hey, I've used your product for years. So it's like that with Magic. I've been using their boots for years and years. And then Bionic Equine Gloves. I was looking for something that could actually keep my grip on cross country, whether it was in the rain, going through the water complex, getting splashed, getting sweat on it from the horse. I tried so many different gloves. None of them held up. None of them had enough grip. And so they, I approached them when I found them, and I was like, and I tried them, and I was like, oh my God, this is great. So I have a sponsorship with them. I think he's retiring, so I don't know what's going on. I don't know if I need to stock up on gloves, because he was like the main distributor for Bionic. There's like he was the equine specific distributor. And then I have a new one is HCS Saddlery. Again, I've used them for years. I actually dropped a sponsorship with Prestige Saddles because I sat in Fairfax and I loved it so much, and I felt such a huge difference in how my horses moved, that I dropped my sponsorship with Prestige and bought just retail full price Fairfax everything. That was 6 years ago, and then I just picked up the sponsorship with them this summer.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. And then the last one is Stride Animal Health. So they were another one I'd used their gut supplements for years, and they made a big difference with Kai. He's always been all the time at competitions, and then about once a month in between, he'd get extremely loose stool.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just and uncomfortable. Like, you'd see him, like, one or two days a month, and he'd be swaying, and it'd be liquid. And so I tried their gut supplements, and that really helped him. It's mm-hmm. not completely away, but it's, like, once, twice a year now, so mm-hmm. I'll take that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're my other sponsor. Been with them for a few years now.
Awesome.
So really grateful for everyone, and especially, you know, I know I'm not a big fish. I'm not Boyd. I'm not Philip. I'm not riding on a
yeah.
team. I'm not projected to ride on a team. So it means a lot that they, you know, sponsor me, and that's a big thing with them.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, I say, look, I'm the average everyday person.
Yeah. Like,
if Boyd uses magic, great. And a lot of people are gonna like that's a good sponsorship.
Yeah.
But I can also, you know, be a lot more on a personal level with people.
Yeah, exactly.
People will reach out to me and ask me questions about the mm-hmm. product versus, you know, they're
yeah.
not gonna reach out to Boyd and ask
yeah.
him about magic boots.
Yeah. What do you use, Boyd? Alrighty. So as we wrap this up, can you just tell us how we can get in contact with you? If someone wants to maybe set up a lesson with you or learn more about the academy, how can they reach you, whether it be on social medias or your phone number, if you want to leave that, we can put it in the show notes. How can they get in contact with you?
Yeah, so like I said, I have pretty much all the social media now. I would say my major ones, it's always Facebook, at least for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have two pages on Facebook. I had my like riding page that I've had for years and years.
Mm-hmm.
And I've kept that, and I made a separate page for the Equine Academy. So those are both on Facebook, Michael Wilhelm Eventing and then Equine Academy.
Okay.
But like I said, the website is www.equineacademy.com. So there's contact forms
yeah.
on there.
Perfect.
And yeah, that's so reach out if you yeah. have questions. And like I said, I'm really excited to put on the masterclass. You know, I have a lot of stuff. Like I said, it's aimed at the average everyday rider.
Yeah.
It's not, if you want to be a professional right now, if you're not in that program, it might help you.
Yeah.
But if you're out working for Boyd right now, you're
yeah.
probably learning everything that I've
yeah.
I've already learned.
Yeah.
So it's not maybe, you know, it's not
yeah.
necessarily for you. It's for the adult amateur, the one
yeah.
who has, you know, one horse or maybe rides mm-hmm. in lessons a few times a week.
Yep.
So I
yeah.
love helping people, and
yeah.
hopefully people find it helpful and interesting and educational, and
yeah.
It takes off and
yeah.
keep going.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. We'll definitely add all your links in the show notes so then people can follow along. And before we leave today, is there anything else that you want to leave the young riders with? Any advice or anything you just want to tell them to kind of keep in their mind going ahead?
Yeah, I mean, I think we covered a good bit. A couple of things I guess maybe I didn't mention is don't be afraid to ask. You know, I've reached out to so many people, and that's the great part in the
yeah.
equestrian world. It's so accessible. Like, I have, I don't know, 10 different Olympian phone numbers in my phone. Like, that's insane. Like, nobody
yeah.
has, no one in the basketball world, like, playing in the local league has LeBron James's phone number. You can't go get lessons from LeBron
yeah.
James. You can go get lessons from Philip.
Yeah.
So the equestrian world is a lot more accessible than
yeah.
almost any other sport.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually how I got Magic as a sponsor. I mean, I've asked all of them, but Magic, it was like a shot in the dark. They weren't accepting applications,
yeah.
nothing. It was an email mix-up that I somehow got the email, and I went, by the way. So don't be afraid to ask. The worst thing
yeah.
someone can say is no,
yeah.
and then you move on your way. But you'll find that in the equestrian world, I think a lot of people want to be helpful.
Yeah.
You need to kind of gauge who you're getting your help from, because there's also some shady people in the equestrian world, as there is everywhere. But so that would be the big thing. Don't be afraid to ask.
Yeah.
And, you know, I reached out to Fraser Duffy of Fernhill Sport Horses because I asked him about, you know, if he could tell what the horse's future was going to be like, if there was a pattern that he saw when he had the horses at 4 and 5. that went, oh, you know, this horse is going to be a five-star horse. This is not. And that actually started, I ended up interviewing him for my master class. So I have that video up there now, just talking about how, you know, how they look at horses, what things they look for, how they select them, what his training program looks like for young horses, and all that stuff. So, you know, it's all just try and ask and see what sticks.
Well, thank you again so much for coming on the podcast. And I am sorry, guys, if you're listening, you're like, why is there so much background noise? We are at a horse show, you know, typical horse people. So that is why there is some background noise. But thank you again, Michael, for coming on the podcast. I really hope my listeners enjoyed it. And hopefully people will reach out and follow you along.
Thank you very much for having me.
Of course.